This is a previously recorded episode.
Welcome to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Now, your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan.
Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And Mike, you're calling in today from Cobo Center on the M Squared TechCast. Tell us a little bit about where you are and what you're doing today.
Well, of course, this was press preview days for the North American International Auto Show, and I know you were here this morning because I read your stuff in Technology Century, and I got here. I wanted to be here right away at the beginning and kind of run all day long with all the different shows. Every half an hour, there's a new introduction. So I've been here since 7, and what is it now, almost 3? Or it is 3. And so it's been a really long day already, but it's been very interesting.
All right, so we're going to talk about cars and technology in just a couple of minutes. I also want to point out that at 3:30, we'll be having a discussion about Future City, which is the Engineering Society of Detroit's competition for middle school students to get them interested in STEM education and careers. So we'll be talking with Allison Mars, who is the membership and STEM manager for the Engineering Society of Detroit. We'll also be talking to Linda Gerhardt, who is the global lead for paint quality at the General Motors Tech Center in Warren. She is engineer mentor of the 5-time defending state champion and 2-time defending national champion Future City team from St. John Lutheran School in Rochester. So we'll be talking about that at the bottom of the hour. So don't miss that. But right now, Mike, what did you see at the auto show that blew you away? I have a couple of candidates, but I just wanted to know, you know, what you saw that you liked.
Well, I'm always kind of a sports car guy. I must admit, I like the new Camaro convertible. That was cool. I think they updated the Mustang. I know these aren't politically correct vehicles. They're not electric or SUV, but I'm an old gearhead from the 60s, so I really like those cars. But the whole theme, I thought, I mean, I was dozen press conferences, and everybody's pointing out that, A, they have all sorts of connectability to the world. You know, they have all these... You can sync up your smartphone with the Bluetooth system in the cars, or there's other features along those lines, info entertainment, as it were. Ford had a big presentation where they're rolling out a bunch of stuff in this area. They launched a bunch of new initiatives. There's 4 of them, in fact, and I'll write those up later on. But essentially, they all center on mobility. They all center on, you know, the fact that they're reaching out to try to find more people out there that they can connect with, that'll help them design the cars later on and make them more customer focused. And then of course, hybrids and electrics and all the rest, that's all the rage here. Everybody was introducing something along those lines.
Yeah, Mike, I was sort of surprised about that. I mean, here we are where we've got, you know, $1.70, $1.80 a gallon gas. It's cheaper now with inflation than it has been since the glory days that everybody talks about in the late 60s and early 70s before the oil embargo, you know, when everybody had, 10-mile-a-gallon Mustang GTs. So you've got an era of really cheap gasoline. At the same time, you've got automakers rolling out all sorts of electric vehicles and hybrids. I guess we people like to bang on the auto industry for not thinking any farther ahead than the next quarterly profit statement, but they really are looking at the longer term here with these hybrid and electric vehicles, it seems to me.
Well, the other issue is CAFE standards. How are they going to meet those tough CAFE standards if people don't start buying electric vehicles, things like that, you know? How are they going to be able to meet all these zero emissions issues like in places like California if people don't start buying electric vehicles? But, you know, it Carlos Ghosn and I was just at a press conference where he talked about that very thing, and he said, oh, we can build them, but if people aren't going to buy them, it doesn't do us very much good now, does it? So, I mean, it's a real – they're – in this short-term oil bubble, too. I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on, a lot of politics involved here with Saudi Arabia. And they're trying to drive a lot of the frackers out of the market. So they're flooding the market with oil right now, but that's only a temporary thing. And, you know, sooner or later, we're going to be back at $3 or $4 a gallon. I can't say exactly when, but it'll happen. So at least when that does happen, the auto industry for a change will be ahead of the curve rather than behind the curve.
Yeah, they will actually have products ready to meet demand when gasoline goes back up. Another big trend that I saw was sort of these small SUVs everywhere. I guess that's today's take on the station wagon, the family hauler of that bygone era.
Yeah, and they're even getting smaller. Smaller and electric. The Bolt that was introduced at CES last week was here, and they gave more details on it. I had a chance to take a look at it. Reminded me a little bit of the Gremlin. Remember the Gremlin way back when?
Yes.
About the same size, you know? It's been an interesting show. I mean, every time I've been going to this, is my 20th year I've come to the show, and it's just been all over the map on what they want to do. And they're always trying to anticipate what the consumers are going to want, and that's very difficult to do, right?
Sure. So what was the most interesting? Now, I basically blew off the press conferences and just went around the show floor. I guess that's a product of my former employer at Cranes Detroit Business. They always encouraged us to actually just wander around and look for news rather than go to press conferences. But there were a lot of product announcements today, right? What was some of the more interesting ones that you went to?
Well, let's see. I guess I would get back to the Ford one. They always have that at Joe Louis Arena. And it's more not so much the product itself, but the fact that they're going to really work hand in glove. They're going to be setting up these consumer hubs around the world in New York and Tokyo and Shanghai and places like that, and invite people in and sort of cultivate them so that maybe they're not going to buy a Ford that year or maybe next year, but they're going to have that relationship building thing. That's a whole new way of going, I think, in terms of marketing from what I've seen before in the auto industry. So that was kind of impressive, I thought. Then other companies, again, I can't say one particular, you know, it is a product that I'm really impressed with. I can't say I saw that this year. I know you made reference to that. What did you think was real impressive?
Well, I got to tell you, I really liked some of the, so I guess you'd call them pocket rockets. I drive a little bitty Ford Fiesta. That's my daily commuter car. And there was a Ford Fiesta ST there that was a mere $24,000, and it claims 33 miles per gallon on the highway. The Ford Fiesta is a really small car. It's sort of a European style car. The back seat's essentially a joke. It's really only for two people. But it's a lot of fun to drive, even with the standard like 135 horsepower engine in it that I've got on mine. And the Ford Fiesta ST, they put 197 horsepower in that thing. And I can only imagine, since it already handles like a go-kart, how much fun it would be with an extra 60 or 70 horsepower in that thing. But maybe it's a good thing that I don't have one, because it could also mean a lot of trouble with law enforcement. One never knows. So.
Yeah, you know, you suddenly get a lead foot. Next thing you know, you're going 50 miles an hour in a 35 zone at Dearborn, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah, and they don't take too kindly to that there. The other thing that I saw that I really liked, of course, at a price tag like that, I mean, everybody's going to like it, but the hybrid supercar from BMW, the i8, they take a 228 horsepower gasoline engine, couple it with 129 horsepower electric motor, equals the top speed of 155 miles an hour. But you'd better break your piggy bank, because it's also $141,000. So this is the car. This is what you buy if you happen to win the Powerball jackpot, right? I mean, this becomes your everyday car. But there were
the $1 billion Powerball.
Yes.
Yeah, so.
Can you believe
it?
Yeah, I know. So I'm just wondering what's on tap for tomorrow in terms of, are you going to be there tomorrow, or I was going to stop by again in the morning?
It's kind of like, it's the luxuries tomorrow. You've got Lincoln, you got Acura, you're going to have GMC. I'm told they're going to be coming out with some new SUVs. Right? They make the very large ones, of course.
Yeah.
That's going to be tomorrow. It's kind of the other stuff. For instance, I've got a meeting tomorrow with the folks from KCOM, U.S. Army.
Yep.
They're going to talk about a lot of the dual-use stuff that they do, where they work with the auto industry to develop it, and then they can then transfer it to military vehicles. And instead of having the $600 hammer kind of scenario, they can get it a lot less expensive kind of thing.
Right.
So we're talking to them about that.
Yeah, that was...
some other stuff in there, like consumer electronics stuff. I mean, the main stuff is today. This is like the heart of it. And then the second day is other stuff.
Yeah, that's something I wanted to talk about in our second segment that'll be coming up in a couple of minutes. Is I wanted to talk about the American luxury marques trying to fight with the Japanese and German luxury brands, and I also wanted to talk. And I don't know what they're going to do with the basement, the so-called Michigan Hall at Kobo for the public show. Is it? Do you know if it's still going to be? Is it still going to be the big army vehicles down there, or are they going to do something else with that space?
I haven't had a chance to get down there, but I do know that they have a self-propelled howitzer down there.
Yes.
Well, that's pretty heavy, right?
Yeah,
There
was a lot of stuff
with the Army about that. Yeah, they go, well, we couldn't bring it upstairs. They wouldn't let us.
Yeah, right. Well, there was a lot of stuff with 50 caliber machine guns hanging off it down there. Yeah, I did notice that. But, and they also had, I think, Mack Woods Dune Rides over in our old stomping grounds at Silver Lake, a west side of the state, would be interested because they had some really cool modified Jeeps down there that would be a blast to drive across the sand dunes, too. But I'm pretty sure they're only for Uncle Sam at this point.
Yeah, probably so.
All right. Well, Mike, we're going to be back in just a couple of minutes to talk more about the North American International Auto Show with Mike Brennan, the co-host here at the M Squared TechCast. And then we'll be in studio with a couple of folks from Future City, the Engineering Society of Detroit program. The Michigan Regional Future City Competition is coming up Monday, January 25th at the Suburban Collection Showplace in Novi. And if you're worried about the future of America, I can tell you one thing you ought to do is come check out Future City, because you will be impressed by what 6th, 7th, and 8th graders are doing to plan the green cities of tomorrow. And that's what they'll be doing on January 25th. They've been working since the beginning of the school year, some of them even before that, back in the summer. And it'll be great fun to see what's going on at Future City. All right.
And this is Mike Brennan.
And it's Matt Roush. And this is the M Squared TechCast. And we'll be back in roughly 90 seconds or so. Thanks. Hey, it's Matt Roush.
And Mike Brennan.
And we are back with segment two of the M Squared TechCast for Monday, January 11th, 2016. And we're talking the North American International Auto Show in Detroit. Mike and I were both there today. I'm in the studio. Mike's still at the auto show. Mike, one of the things you mentioned kind of in passing in the last segment that I wanted to talk about was there was something done by the American automakers very intentionally this year. They broke off their luxury brands away away from the rest of their displays, sort of. So you had Lincoln all by itself with a brand new multi-million gazillion dollar display that was in there with marks like Mercedes-Benz and Porsche. And sort of the same thing was true for Cadillac. It, too, was broken away from the main GM display, and it was someplace completely different. Now, Lincoln in particular has been struggling sales-wise lately. In competing with Cadillac and the likes of Mercedes and Acura and Infiniti and brands like that, what are they showing? What did you think of what they were showing? Did you find anything impressive? I know I have got some thoughts about Cadillac, but tell me what you think about Lincoln.
I've never thought that much of Lincoln, I must admit. I didn't get a chance to really get through there because they didn't have their press conferences tomorrow. So I was more in the GM area, looking at the Cadillacs and things like that. But generally, one of the things I heard was that the luxury brand is around 11.2% of the U.S. market. What's luxury? I don't know. They didn't define that, but I think that's probably, you know, 50, 60 and above, because typically people are spending more on the 35 range, according to NADA studies. But yeah, Lincoln's been struggling. And even in the Ford press conference, I don't think Billy Ford made any mention at all of Lincoln. It was just all truck. It was their hybrids. It was this new initiative they have underway to, you know, reach out and be more connected to the audience out there, or the future buyers, I guess. But I'll have to wait for Lincoln until tomorrow. They're going to be rolling out something. I just don't know what it is yet.
Yeah, I'm planning on being there for that, too, because that press conference is tomorrow morning at 8:30 for Lincoln. Cadillac has a new, you know, once again, here we go again with the small SUVs that sort of remind me of a station wagon. Cadillac rolled out a mid-sized one, a new mid-sized one. You know, I forget what they call it. All of their models are CT something. It seems like CTX, CTZ, CT whatever. But it was a beautiful car. Absolutely gorgeous. But, you know, the market of people who could pay like $55,000 for something like that, I would imagine that's kind of not a real huge market, right?
No, not very big. And then they also, with Cadillac, I looked at one that was the ATS-V, I think it was called. So it's for $77,000, and it had 600 horsepower in it. So I'm thinking, well, this is probably not the average Joe's commuter car, right? But sure was pretty.
Oh, my favorite car in the ludicrous horsepower department, though, was the Hellcat from our friends at Fiat Chrysler, the Dodge Hellcat. That was, I think, 705 horsepower in that car. That just really looks like trouble to me. It that would be something with bad intent, but it would be a heck of a lot of fun to drive around, say at the Woodward Dream Cruise, and sort of say, here, this is what people are going to be restoring, you know, like 50, 70 years from now. You know, it's going to be one of these. So
if you've ever driven a car like that, when I was the Chrysler beat writer for the Free Press, I drove the Viper on the Chelsea test track.
Yeah.
And I got that up to about 140 miles an hour, and Chrysler engineer sitting next to me, goes, I think we're going fast enough, Mr. Brennan. I go, no, we're not. So, it's pretty. And then you get back in your regular car, do you think your engine's falling out or something? It's just amazing.
Yeah. To have that kind of power at your beck and call all the time is a pretty astounding thing. Now, the only car I've ever had with an engine that big was a big old Ford truck. So it didn't, you know, I mean, it the engine sort of matched the vehicle. It wasn't really that fast of a car, even though it had 390 horsepower in it. So, in terms of the this show going forward, I wanted to ask you about that too. I guess this space at Cobo is not going to be expanded when Joe Louis Arena comes down. I guess they're looking at turning that into some kind of residential and retail thing. That's the last I heard anyway.
I mean, the same thing. We were just talking about that, and it seems like such a crazy thing to do because they need more space here.
Yeah. This is, I mean, for one brief moment, back about 30 years ago, Cobo Center was the largest convention center in the country, and now it's been lapped and then some by Las Vegas and Orlando and a couple of other places, and it's now like the 24th largest, you know, convention venue in the country. You know, it's 700,000 square feet. I think they're close to 3 million in Las Vegas. so you could put, you know, three and change of our auto shows, you know, into the Las Vegas Convention Center. And then they've got the Sand Center as well nearby. I know, you know, what are you, you know, what are they telling you about the future of this show when you talk to the auto people? I mean, are they happy with the space? Do they, you know, do they really want more? I mean, what, is this going to continue to be a sort of nationally important show?
Yeah, they really want more space. But, you know, we got the river on one side and pretty much everything on the other, that all the hotels and different things, the firehouse. I'm looking at the firehouse sitting there.
Mm-hmm.
And what are you going to do with all that stuff? You can't really expand across the street. It's, you know, there's some players that just didn't exhibit here this year. But I think the core of the top 20 or 30 marks will still come here because it's really the big show in North America. I don't care about Chicago or New York says. It's still Detroit. And it's synced up really nicely with CES now, where CES shows you more of the gadgets. And then Detroit shows you how those gadgets are going to fit in the car.
Yeah, that was another thing that I wanted to mention is they've seemed to have worked it out. There were a couple of years there, maybe 10 years ago, where CES and the Detroit Auto Show were the same week, and they seem to have synced that up now to where the auto show in Detroit, I think quite intentionally, waits a week so that it's the week after CES. And the auto companies have gotten bigger and bigger at CES. There's something like 250,000 square feet of Detroit 3 space at CES now. You know, where they show you sort of gadgets, connectivity, video screens, that kind of thing, for the car. And then they, and, you know, so basically that's where they have the really high tech sort of concepts. And then you come to Detroit and they show you the stuff that's sort of the market version of that, right?
Yeah, that's pretty much what it is. And really, it's not so much, it's not the baby boomers demanding that they do all this gadgets in the cars that sync up all their various devices. I mean, it's the millennials and it's the Gen Xers that just live digitally. And if they don't have it in the car, they're not going to buy the car. So, I mean, it's really Detroit responding to consumer demand, clearly.
Mm-hmm. And there's more and more of an effort also to, I guess, sort of put screens in cars in which you can have all those smartphones, phone apps that, you know, sync up tight and, you know, basically it's all voice command, so it's not distracted driving, or at least as least distracted as you can, you know, can achieve. I got to tell you, though.
Well, heads up displays, things like that. What concerns me is every one of them also are rolling out 10-inch screens on their dash. I'm sorry, that's going to be distracting, I think.
Yeah, I think so, too, especially since, you know, I can't tell you, I'm sure you experience this, too. Whenever you're commuting, don't you see, like, half the people seem to be looking at their phones when you're driving? I mean,
And clearly it's against the law in the state to text, but I can see people all around me texting while they're driving.
Which is
a little spooky at 80 miles an hour, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah, there you are on 275 or M14 or 96 or 94 and 696, and there's the guy next to you has got one hand on the wheel face down with the other hand on his phone. So
yeah, it's really, you know, they're going to do something about that. Some states have done that. It actually have banned handheld cell phones in the vehicle where you have to have hands-free.
Yep.
I think that'd be a swell thing to do. You're still distracted, but you're looking out through the windshield rather than looking at your phone.
Yeah, at least if you're yelling at somebody on a hands-free phone, you're no more distracted than you would be if you were yelling at somebody who was in the car with you. You know, it's at least
don't make me stop this car, right?
Yeah, it's at least no worse than that. Or I'll turn right around and come back to the house and give you a spanking. Right, yeah, okay. So in terms of the public show, let's tell folks what the public show hours is. I guess industry preview days are this week, Wednesday and Thursday, right?
And then the gala is on Friday.
Right. And didn't they get, somebody told me they already had sort of a mini gala already this past weekend. I didn't hear anything about that, but I saw some stuff about it on television.
Yeah, I got invited to it on Sunday, but that was the same day that the weather turned nasty and I come in from Ann Arbor, so I kind of nixed that. But
yeah, okay.
Yeah, that was for the press. They had a little mini show. Buick did a bunch of debuts there rather than doing them here. They did it at that particular event. You know, it used to be in the old days that the press days were 3.5 days. Started on Sunday, ran through Wednesday, midday. And they've compressed it down, but now there's just so many introductions that they're stretching it back out again.
Yeah.
But getting back to the public, they can come in on Saturday. I'm not sure what the hours are. I don't have that right in front of me. But, and of course, they have all these these devices where you can sync up your smartphone, get the tours. We probably should talk about that, right? Max Muncy?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, I mean, once you come here, you'll be able to plug your smartphone in, as it were, and you'll be able to sort of self-guide yourself around. I think I'm not even sure what the price is because I don't actually pay. I'm a reporter, right? But I think it's $12 or $15 to get in. Is that what he said? I can't remember exactly.
Yeah, I'm looking it up on my computer right now. So vamp for a couple of minutes. Play the girl from Ipanema or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay. It's $15, and the hours are 9 to 7, and the last day of the show is a week from Sunday. So that would be.
I would warn people not to come on the weekends if they can avoid it.
That would be the 24th. January 24th is the last day of the public show. Because if you're going to come, my thing was when I used to bring my wife and kids to the show, we'd go every year. We would always get up early and go right at the crack of the show opening. I mean, literally, we'd be standing in line when they opened the show at 9 o'clock in the morning. And then we'd be done by like 1 p.m, which is when the crowd seemed to get really completely insane. So if you're going to go on the weekends, I would say get up early and come early. And that would be your best shot at actually being able to do some of this stuff. I mean, there's some fun stuff at this show. There's some interactive features. I know the Ford Motor Company exhibit has a 4x4 simulator where you can take a virtual Ford F-150 through some mud ruts and some swamps and stuff like that and have a good old time. There are things like that to do at the show, but if you are there in the late afternoon or early evening during the public days, the lines for those, I would imagine, are going to be completely insane.
Not to mention that I'm probably going to be at any given time 20 or 30,000 people in Coblo. Elbow to elbow. So.
And how many reporters are there? 5,000, I think. And there was probably another 5,000, industry people there today. So even with 10,000 in there, it can get a little tight in some places. Although if you're lucky enough to get a media or an industry pass for those days, that's obviously the way to do it because it's a heck of a lot more fun to actually be able to get in and out of these cars I just think about what cars were like when I was a kid, and I think about what cars are like now. They are. We have reduced fatalities per million miles driven in this country sixfold since the 1950s. So we've managed to preserve our car culture while making our cars safer, cleaner, more fun to drive, more efficient, more everything. There's really never been a better time for the automobile. And that's what Detroit's about, man. And it's on display at the North American International Auto Show. It's worth seeing.
It's going to get even better when they move into autonomous vehicles. But that one's like you're looking at 5 years out. Although there are some features being introduced now, like automatic braking. When the car in front of you stops, the sensors pick that up and automatically brake your car. Things like that. The truly hands-free, take-me-home car kind of thing, mm-hmm. We're a ways out from that. But when that comes, that's really going to reduce a lot of fatalities, I think.
Yep, absolutely. They're just going to keep getting better and safer, I think, and more efficient. The government has mandated that, certainly. They've got to get to 54.5 miles a gallon fleet average by 2025, which is a scant 9 years off now. So anyway,
now you know why they're pushing electric, right? That'll get you there.
So. Yeah, and why they're lightweighting everything too. I mean, I can't believe how light some of these cars are these days, but they still seem fairly solid. They still do well in the crash tests. Anyway, right. Thanks, Mike. We're about out of time for this segment. We'll be back in a couple of minutes, and we'll be talking Future City, the Michigan regional competition that is managed by my employer, the Engineering Society of Detroit. That's the cheap bell that we use for a shameless plug for one's employer when you're on this show. But the whole next half hour is going to be pretty much about ESD. So join us for that. We'll be right back. This is the M Squared TechCast, and I'm Matt Rausch.
And I'm Mike Brennan.
All right. We'll talk to you in a minute. Hey, it's the M Squared TechCast for Monday, January 11th, 2016. This is Matt Rausch. I'm flying solo here in the studio in Ferndale of PodcastDetroit.com. Listen to them, support them, love them, do whatever you can to support PodcastDetroit.com. They are bringing you more than 30 podcasts locally produced right here in Ferndale, of which the M Squared TechCast is one. And we take a look at technology from a variety of perspectives here in the Detroit area. I work for an organization, a nonprofit called the Engineering Society of Detroit. We basically serve our members and promote the engineering and scientific professions in the Detroit area. And one of the other things we do is basically try to inspire tomorrow's next generation of engineers and scientists by getting kids interested in STEM and STEM education. One of the ways we do that is a program called Future City that was started by the folks that run National Engineers Week. They now call themselves Discover E. The E is for engineering. Future City is a program for 6th, 7th, and 8th graders, and we have some of the folks from ESD behind that program with us here today. I'd first like to introduce Allison Mars, who is our membership and Future City manager. Allison, what is Future City? Tell the folks a little about that.
Future City is a STEM-based program for kids in the 6th, 7th, and 8th grade, and it's a project-based program. So over the course of about 4 or 5 months, kids work on different projects, and the goal of those projects is to get them involved or interested in STEM education. In doing so, you know, being hands-on, it kind of we hope to spark their interest in science, technology, engineering, and math, so that they go on to be engineers.
So what do they actually do as part of the competition?
So the competition, the basic goal is to design a city 100 years into the future, and it's based around a changing theme each year. This year, the theme is Waste Not, Want Not. So they're really focusing on how to recycle in the future.
Mm-hmm.
So they work on a SimCity project. They do an essay. They build a model and work on a presentation. And this year, they've also added in a project plan. So they're trying to kind of bring the program around to more of a project management based model. So that's something that's new this year.
Heaven forfend. Boy, that's something I could have used at that age. So yes. Part of the competition is then they actually play their city. They sort of enter their city in this Future City game, right? And the game responds to sort of how well they've designed their city, and they get a score out of that, right?
Yes. All the components have a score attached to them. And as you go along, you're kind of adding up your points, and it culminates in the final competition that we're holding at the Suburban Collection Showplace in Novi in January, where they present their model and presentation, and those also gain them more points, and we crown the winner.
Okay. And that is 2 weeks from today, January 25th at the Suburban Collection Showplace. The initial judging phase starts at 9 o'clock, right?
Yes. Yep. That is when the initial judging times begin, and the kids, we usually divide them up into different judging groups, and the judges go around, and the kids then give their presentation, and the judges look at their model, and they answer questions from the judges. So it really gets the kids working on presentation skills.
Mm-hmm.
Building a model is a lot of teamwork. So it's a great just real life experience for the kids for when they go into the workplace.
And the models there's a lot of restrictions on the model, right? Like you can't spend a gazillion dollars on a model, correct?
Yep. There is a $100 budget. So that's
and that doesn't go very far anymore.
It does not go far because it does, you know, there is a kind of a plywood that you put the model on.
Yeah, standard size base. Everybody uses a standard size, right?
Yep. So you really are encouraged because it is Future City. You are encouraged to use a lot of recycled materials as much as possible. And, so a lot of the kids kind of reuse the materials that they've used from last year's model if they were returning school. They can get donated items, but they do have to stay under the $100 budget. A lot of kids do also kind of put costumes together or cute little, costumes that they can jazz up their presentation with.
Yeah, the oral presentation really winds up sort of being more like a short play or a skit or something,
mm-hmm.
right, that they write.
Yep. Yep, and it's 5 to 7 minutes, which is a long time for kids that, you know, aren't used to public speaking.
Right.
And in fact, the final five teams that go up on stage, they're presenting between in front of a whole group of people.
Right.
So it's a good learning experience for them.
Yep. We also have with us here today Linda Gerhart, who is the engineer mentor for our five-time defending state champion, two-time defending national champion, a Future City team. We're pretty darn proud of them at ESD because they've won the national championship 2 years in a row, but we love them anyway. They're great people. They're great kids from St. John Lutheran School in Rochester. Linda, tell me, I hear there's a story behind how you first got involved in Future City and being a mentor to this team. How did that happen? How'd they suck you in?
Yeah, you never know what you're going to be involved in 1 week to the next. I actually got involved through a teacher at St. John whose daughter is a runner, and my daughter is a runner, and my daughter graduated from Lutheran High North in Macomb and was helping coach Lutheran High North, and we were at the state meet at MIS, and everyone goes to Big Boy after the state meet, and ended up sitting across from John Fund, and we started talking, and he says, so what do you do? I said, I'm an engineer, and all of a sudden he started talking about Future City because he had been involved for about 10 years at that point, and he was seeking a new mentor. And so a year later, he came to one of the cross-country meets, and he asked if I would help out. And I, at the time, thought, well, how much work can it be? And that was
those are famous last words.
Yeah, that was 8 years ago. It was 8 years ago. So I've sponsored – this is my eighth team.
Okay.
And it's been quite a ride. We actually ended up winning Michigan the first year, and I was super hooked at that point. It's extremely fulfilling sharing what you learn in your own education, and I have a doctorate in engineering, so I actually taught a little bit after that, and then working at General Motors and sharing what I've learned with the team, and also the rubric is extremely rigorous. It's all encompassing. It doesn't matter what you're good at because you're going to be good at one part of the program. Mm-hmm. You know, there's the building of the model, there's the essay, there's the writing, there's even harvesting the parts is a lot of fun.
All right. So tell me a little bit about your career path, if you would, for kind of the rest of – we got maybe 5 minutes left in this segment. But tell me a little bit about how you came to be an engineer. Like where did you grow up and go to high school, and where did you get the idea to be an engineer?
I went to high school at Sterling Heights High School, mm-hmm. and I graduated there and went to Wayne State. And started in their Department of Engineering. I worked on a chemical engineering undergrad.
Mm-hmm.
And actually went over to ESD when it was over in Detroit. It was a Rocca Memorial Building.
Yes.
There for some banquets for end of the year for some of the honors mm-hmm. Awards there. And then
yeah, we still do that. We're not down, we're in Southfield now, but we still do the end of the year banquet.
So that
yeah.
was back in the 80s. And then got a master's degree at Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute right
sure.
after that in New York. Came back, started working some more at GM. I had done an undergrad co-op program mm-hmm. at GM. And then when my daughter was born, I left GM on an extended educational leave and went back and got a PhD at Wayne State again in the Department of Chemical Engineering.
Okay. So when did you decide to become an engineer? How old were you when that happened that you thought that would be a cool career path?
It was probably middle school. I was always pretty good at math and science. And I think that's one great thing about Future City is it allows me and other mentors who get involved in this to show girls especially that engineering's kind of cool and you can do great things and you can have a very comfortable lifestyle
mm-hmm.
by being an engineer. So it was middle school. I was encouraged by a lot of my teachers, hey, you know, you should pursue this, even though back then there were more guys than girls that were entering engineering.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's leveling out somewhat, but it's still heavily based.
And a lot of it depends on what kind of engineering you're talking about, too, right? Because mechanical engineering, I guess, is still pretty much overwhelmingly men. But some of the other forms of engineering, women are starting to make inroads in there. I don't have at the top of my head what the statistics are for chemical, so I don't really know. But, you know, among your peer group at GM, are there other women? Or like you, the Lone Ranger?
Yeah, oh, no, there's plenty of women in my department.
Okay,
plenty
that's good. Yeah, well, I mean, that's one of the things we keep hearing about is an engineering shortage, and then you see all these engineering programs that are like 75% men, and you think, well, geez, if we could just get a few more girls involved, then maybe we could help fix the engineer shortage, right?
That's for sure.
So,
well, wasn't your team last year all girls?
Yeah, last year our presentation team was an all-girl team, and our alternate was also a girl. And actually, my first year doing this project, my team was all girls, and since then it's been back and forth, and now we're back to all girls.
Okay. So is this another all-girl presentation team for this year?
It is.
Okay.
It is an all-girl presentation team, and our alternate is our simulation lead
mm-hmm.
He's our alternate, and he was the simulation lead last year as well.
Okay. Well, what's a simulation lead in Future City?
Well, he's the guy who's really good at SimCity.
Okay.
And we've got one that is extremely good at SimCity. His name's Ben Toth. Yeah, he's
all right.
Very strong.
Oh, now, he was on the team last year, right?
He was.
Yeah, I remember him from last year. So, yeah, but this is his last year, right? He's an eighth grader this year?
He is the seventh grader.
Oh, seventh grader. So you've got him back for another year.
He was a sixth grader. And when we were in D.C., you know, we won the award for best simulation, and it was done primarily by Ben Toth, our sixth grader.
Wow. Okay. So somebody's really good at SimCity. You know, I played that game when it was the DOS version, you know, back in the 90s. You know, I remember that game very fondly, and it's a lot, but I would bet it's a lot more complicated now. So
our teachers have the toughest time, I think, with the SimCity portion. It's a lot of work.
Yeah. So we're going to talk in a minute about what's going to happen on Monday, January 25th at the Suburban Collection Showplace in Novi when the Michigan Regional Competition for Future City happens. The winner of that event then gets a trip to Washington, D.C. to compete in the national finals that are sponsored by Discover E. That's the folks behind National Engineers Week, which is held every year in February. But for right now, this is Matt Rausch, and I'm here going solo in studio on the M Squared TechCast. Mike Brennan's at the auto show this week, and we'll be right back with more about Future City. Hey, it's Matt Rausch, and this is the M Squared TechCast. I'm here in the studio today with a couple of people from Future City, which is a really interesting event for middle school students to promote STEM education and careers here in the Detroit area. I'm with Allison Mars, who is the membership and Future City manager at the Engineering Society of Detroit, which is also my employer. Ding for the shameless plug. It's ESD.org. And I'm also here with Linda Gerhardt, who is the engineer mentor for a fantastic Future City team from St. John Lutheran School in Rochester. She's also global lead for paint quality at the General Motors Tech Center in Warren. So at Future City, we've talked a little bit about sort of the nature of the competition. So, Allison, what happens Monday? The kids show up in school buses at like 8:30 in the morning, and then what happens?
Yep, hopefully by 8:30 if there's not bad weather, which there always is.
Yes. But, you can count on it, folks. There's going to be snow on Sunday night. Just plan on it.
Yeah. So they set up – the kids come in and set up their models and we expect just under 30 teams to come.
Okay.
So
like 400 kids, 500 kids, something like that?
Yeah. This year we're expecting about 450 kids.
Wow.
So it's a large group. I mean, when you add in all the judges and special award judges, it's a big group. It's fun and exciting. But they come in and set up their models, and the judges start going around, and the kids start doing their presentations. We give them a lunch, and after lunch, the top five are announced. The top five finalists are announced. They go on to give their presentation in front of the group, and then the winner is announced.
So the top five teams present in front of the entire crowd of the other, like, 400 kids, right? So
yep.
that gives these kids sort of experience in making presentations before a really large group.
It is. It's a great experience. I mean, they really have to think on their feet, because then they go in front of another panel of finalist judges, so they get a whole other set of questions. So they really do have to think on their feet. And if you're in the top five, you're having to think on your feet a lot, because you're basically giving two presentations during the day.
Yeah, and these finalist judges are really distinguished, like, big-time engineers in the community, right?
Yes, DTE.
Ford Motor Company,
yep,
I know.
Ford Motor, yep.
Yeah,
yep.
Okay. So, yeah, these are people who are managers of large groups of engineers for some really big, you know, important companies that are taking time out of their day, you know,
yep.
to judge this event. So good on them. So if this event really kind of isn't open to the public, if you want to come see it, though, the way you can do that is to volunteer to be a judge. So, Allison, tell me a little bit about how people can do that.
Yep. If they're interested, we're always looking for competition day judges. We have, you know, we like to have a bank of judges, but a lot of times if weather's bad, they don't show up. So we'd, you know, gladly accept a walk-in judge. That person would need to judge the presentation and model, and we have a great folder and pamphlet and instructions and judging instructions and a little mini training session on how to do that. We're always
yep.
open to walk-in judges. We could always use the extra help.
So if you want to be a judge, what time do you have to be there by?
I would get there about 8:30.
Okay, 8:30 a.m. Yep. on Monday the 25th at the Suburban Collection Showplace in Novi. And you should have at least some kind of working knowledge of engineering or you know, urban planning or architecture or something like that, right?
It is preferable, yeah.
Yeah.
Just so you can ask questions. And we do have a couple of questions that are mandatory questions that have to be asked, but you kind of want to know a little bit about what the kids have been working on.
Okay. So Linda, tell me how long your team from St. John, you know, what's the preparation like for an event like this? When did you guys start working, and how much have you been working?
Well, we meet first week of school for regular sessions. We have an academic enrichment class that takes place at the end of the school day, and I head over there and help teach that, and then we meet after school that same day. So we do that twice a week. So that's about 3 hours twice a week.
Okay.
And then in November we start to add Saturdays.
Mm-hmm.
So we meet from 9:30 to 2:30 on Saturdays, and then over the holiday, if necessary, we'll continue to meet, and then we're actually meeting on Martin Luther King Jr. Day
mm-hmm.
Next Monday for a field trip, an exciting field trip to a landfill, because of this year's topic, you know, waste not, want not. We try to do field trips to relevant locations. The team has also in the past been to a recycling center, and we were at the anaerobic digester at Michigan State University, so try to enrich it with field trips. So in total, by the time Michigan Regionals rolls around, we're pushing 200 hours.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah, it's there's no secret. It's persistence and a lot of time, a lot of effort. The presentation team actually spends a lot of time also practicing Q&A. We have sheets of Q&A mm-hmm. examples for them to work through, so that no matter what's thrown at them, they kind of know how to answer questions.
So is your presentation, and is that like completely scripted? Is it partly scripted and partly ad lib, or how do you prepare for that?
It starts out as way too long. Generally,
right.
It's you're allowed 7 minutes, and it's always too long, and then gets pared down, and then the ad libbing gets written into the script based on the way that the team wants to say certain things.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, it's running at about 6 minutes and 37 seconds or so.
Okay.
And,
So I don't know the judging rubric. What happens if you go over? Is there some kind of penalty? Or
there is
a penalty. You get a ding. You get the bell goes off, and you get a penalty.
Okay.
Yeah. So you have to stop speaking at 7 minutes.
Oh, wow. Okay. It doesn't matter if you're done or not.
It doesn't matter if you're done or not.
Oh, geez. Okay. Yeah. As a former high school band nerd, I still cringe at the year that our director screwed up, and our high school band festival entry went over the time allotted. So yeah, right. That's. That's a major crisis when that happens, when you go over. Yeah, that's no fun at all in these kinds of competitions. So tell me how many engineer mentors have we recruited for this event here, Allison? I mean, how many people are involved?
This year we've paired every school up with an engineering mentor. So like I said, we expect just under 30 teams. So we have just under 30 mentors that we've been able to recruit. And through working at the Engineering Society of Detroit, we obviously have access to a lot of great engineers.
Yep.
So that has been a wonderful help. Occasionally teams do recruit on their own. You know, Linda kind of was recruited on her own.
Mm-hmm.
So if they want to do that, that is perfectly fine. But, you know, I will certainly help a team get an engineering mentor if they need it.
Okay. And in terms of judges, how many judges do we think we might have on competition day?
Gosh, I'm thinking maybe 120, 150.
Okay.
And then that doesn't even include our special award judges. We have a whole list of special awards that we give out.
Oh, yeah. I wanted to talk about that. Thanks for reminding me. So that's a way sort of the community can get involved in this event, right? We have a bunch of special awards that are sponsored.
Yes. So. Yep. And Elena Shalef is the manager of the special awards. And so that is another way they'll be sponsored by, Durr,
auto suppliers, engineering firms,
yep.
Utilities, yeah,
yep.
All companies like that that are involved in engineering and technology and IT will sponsor, the special awards. And we try to make it so that everybody can shine in some way at this event, right? I mean, there's a lot of schools that come year after year after year. And, they don't win the state final, but they go home with some hardware, right? So because they've done something well. It's like kind of like you were saying, Linda, that almost everybody can come to this competition and do something well.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's always something for somebody on the team to do. And we try to break them into teams so that they can work on what they're good at or what they enjoy.
Right.
And it's some way for each team to get recognized for something particular. It's very specific to their project.
Yeah, I know there were some, like Best City for People with Disabilities, if they had taken that into consideration.
Yep.
You know, Most Efficient Use of Energy, Best Use of Transportation, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. There's all sorts of special awards that are sponsored by sort of the corporate community here in the Detroit area.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And the fun thing about it is that we also have a really killer AV company that helps us out with this event. So there's plenty of bright lights and loud music and video, right? So it's just sort of fun for the kids in that way as well.
Yep. They have a good time. Everybody seems to have it's very high energy.
Yeah. It's a neat event. There's a lot of wow factor there. So if, let's say I'm a teacher and I'm thinking, this might be something kind of cool to get my school involved in. How do they get in touch with the people at ESD? Do they get in touch with you or who do they get in touch with?
Yep. They can get in touch with me. My information is on our website, ESD.org.
Mm-hmm.
But registration obviously is closed for this year.
Well, yeah.
But next year, usually they open registration up about July or August, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So teachers are more than welcome to register right then and there. And then they can get started on the project. Usually most teachers get started when they start school in September.
Yeah.
But we're always looking for new schools and new areas of the state. We've expanded. We have a school up in Marquette that's coming actually this year.
No kidding.
Yeah, we're
all the way from the UP.
Yeah. Yep. We're very excited.
Boy, well, they're used to the bad weather up there. That won't scare them if we get a little snow. That's for sure.
I've warned them. Yeah, it'll be a couple-day journey for them, so they're prepared.
All right.
Yeah, teachers are more than welcome to register.
And we usually have some kind of orientation or informational meeting in the summer, right? So people should be on the lookout for that as well?
Usually, when they get back into school, it's usually end of September that I have the orientation. I kind of wait till we have a bunch of schools registered, and then I hold the orientation in September, and they start working on it from then.
Okay. Linda, tell me what it's like to win the state championship. Then I'll ask you about what it's like to win the national championship. But what's it like to win the state championship and go to Washington, D.C.? I mean, what's that like?
It's always exciting to win, and our team has been very blessed. We are always excited to come to the Michigan Regional. There's a lot of stress, a lot of anxiety. And then to stand up there with that trophy is just, it's exhilarating. Kids are so excited. We bring the whole team up. We actually have a team of 20 this year.
Mm-hmm.
And so every one of them has participated and contributed. And Washington, D.C., very, very fun, very exciting to see models from other states and regions. And there's even a team from Shanghai that competes every year.
Mm.
And so you meet teachers and mentors from other parts of the country and develop friendships. So it's very fun.
Okay. So are all 50 states represented or close to it? Or?
There are about 38 regions. So some of the smaller states combine to develop a region, and some of the bigger states might have more than one team.
Yeah, I know Texas and California, I think, have more than one region, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, okay. So, but it's a truly national competition. It's from everywhere in the country and a little bit of international sprinkled in as well.
That's right.
So what was it like the first time you heard the second place team announced at the Nationals and it wasn't you?
So you knew you won. We made it to the top five at Nationals, and then we heard the countdown, 5-4-3. Well, actually 5-4, and then they brought three teams up on stage. And then the third place team was announced, and then it was us and a team from New Jersey, actually. And then it just seemed like they talked forever. And then they announced that New Jersey, you know, had taken second, and that was finally, for John Fund, extremely exciting because he had been involved for about 17 years at that point.
Wow.
So he finally got that national championship trophy and got that trip to Space Camp.
Right. And tell me a little bit about Space Camp. We've got like 3 minutes left here. So
yeah, Space Camp is the week that we went. The first time we won Nationals, and then again last year, is during the week where the Teachers of the Year from all over the country participate, as well as other Teachers of Excellence from all over the world. And it's a week of challenging yourself to do things that you didn't think you could do, and also to do team building, which is similar to what Future City is.
Okay, so you do a simulated either a space shuttle or lunar mission, correct?
That's
what they have you do?
A Mars mission and a lunar mission.
Cool. All right.
Yes, and then there's all kinds of other physical challenges, you know,
okay.
falling backwards off platforms on zip lines and other activities like that.
Oh, my gosh. I'm not too sure about that. But the simulated space flight part sounds fun, you know, especially since there's air, you know, everywhere. You don't have to worry about that.
The girls had a lot of fun this past summer and then.
Well, yeah, because you're kind of separated for the week, right? They take the kids and put them off someplace with their peers, you know, kids their own age, right? And then the adults are off someplace with the other adults,
yeah,
right?
They're with middle schoolers and we're with the adults. We run into each other constantly during the course of the week and keep in touch with texting and lots of fun, very exciting. It was humbling to win a second time. We had, you know, you don't go there expecting that. And
right.
then to walk off with that again, it was amazing.
Well, I believe that's the first time that it happened in the history of the competition.
That's
I know we've been doing it for – ESD has been running this competition 21 years now in Michigan,
yep.
right, Allison?
Yep.
Okay. I don't know how long it is a little bit older than that, I think, this competition. It's maybe like 25 years old or something
is.
Like that.
It is, yes. I'm not sure in the history of who ran it before we did.
Okay.
But yeah, we've had it for 21 years.
Maybe it just wasn't run in Michigan but in other places instead.
Yes, yep.
Well, I want to thank you so much for coming in here today to the studios in Ferndale and talking to us. It's Allison Mars, the membership and Future City Manager for the Engineering Society of Detroit, and Linda Gearhart, Global Lead for Paint Quality at the GM Tech Center in Warren, and also the proud engineer mentor of the Future City team from St. John Lutheran School in Rochester. That's going to just about wrap it up for us this week for the M Squared TechCast. Be with us again next week, Monday at 3 p.m. Mike's got a terrific bunch of guests lined up already for the next 2 week shows. You can read about those at our Facebook and Twitter feeds. Also, this podcast will be available sometime early Wednesday at SoundCloud.com and also on iTunes, so you can download it and spread it to all your friends and listen to it over and over again as many times as you like. And I'm sure some of the people at St. John's probably will download it and save it, so that's a neat thing. So thanks very much. This has been the M Squared TechCast, and I'm Matt Rausch, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks for listening to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Join your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan, next Monday at 3 p.m. If you can't listen live, audio podcasts of the show can be found at podcastdetroit.com.
This is a previously recorded episode.